Professor, the possibility of successfully navigating an asteroid field is approximately 3,720 to 1.
Never tell me the odds.
I'm Pete Mitchell. He's Peyton Jones. And this is the Church Planner Podcast.
Hey, Church Planner, this is Pete Mitchell.
And this is Peyton Jones.
Oh, is that Peyton Jones?
Hey, buddy. It's been a minute.
Dude, so what's been going on with you?
Oh,
right,
man.
Before the podcast, I gave you the lowdown on me. So
no, that's great. My brother came into town.
No way.
Yeah, man. He hasn't been to Southern California for 38 years. So he stayed in my apartment, and even the people who dropped it, I've told you guys before on the podcast, he looks like my twin. And so even the people that dropped him off go, oh my gosh, you know, like, you're kidding. Like, there are people that are from Virginia that he works with, and they dropped him off here from this guy. He was at this weapons expo. And when I say weapons expo, it's like governmental weapons expo.
The good ones.
Like, yeah, man, you're talking like things that pierce through concrete and, I mean, all this crazy stuff. And he was telling me about, like, some of the weapons that are displayed there, and he's like, he's like, you gotta go with me. And I couldn't go. He was gonna get me in. He told me, he goes, I said, oh, so you're kind of like a big deal with this thing. He goes, let me put it this way, I'm one of the only people wearing a suit there. So I'm like, oh,
your brother was wearing a suit?
Yeah. So he's pretty high up, dude, in his field in the government. He deals mainly with, like, budgets. When I tell people it's quartermastering, he corrects me and says, it's not quite that. But anyways, I never fully understand what he does. But everybody wants him to buy their stuff. So when they see him coming, like, almost all of them know him. He's the guy that gets you the contracts. So so he goes to this thing and he walks the floor and everybody chats with him and what have you. But yeah, anyways, but they dropped him off and they're like, oh my gosh, are you guys twins? And he's like, no. And she's like, you said you looked alike, but you guys aren't twins? No, you gotta be twins. And he's like, nope, we're not twins. And we got that a few times. We've been getting that since, gosh, man, like late 90s, you know. In fact, when he showed up at my grad night, he did security for it. Everybody kept going, Peyton, why do you work in security? And he's like, I'm not Peyton. So that's just kind of been a thing, you know? And of course he didn't have long hair. So they're like, you cut your hair. Oh my gosh. You know? And so I had long hair back then down in my butt. And,
you could have just said I had hair back then.
Well, he did. He had Marine Corps hair. He was in the Marine Corps when he did that. He came out for my graduation and then worked security. But it was good, man. It was such a good time. Me and my brother, we just sit there and talk. He's one of my best friends, so don't get jelly. But it was just really good, man.
You used the caveat, one of my best friends.
One of.
You didn't introduce him like you did Chris Langham and go, this is my best friend right in front of me.
Well, so I introduced him to Bo Moffitt and said, Bo Moffitt's my best friend. And he goes, you know, you say that about a lot of people. So you just got to know that.
I'm feeling less and less important the more you talk.
I only have as many best friends on this hand. That's it. So, well, you're my only best friend I do a podcast with.
That's a horrible caveat.
No, that's a good one. Because
you wouldn't have said that back when you were doing it with Barry and your wife.
Yeah, Barry wasn't my best friend.
I don't know. You might have called him that.
No, I wouldn't have. Barry's your best friend now since he works for you.
Well, what's funny is he works for me, but he's had another manager, not me.
Oh, okay. That's good.
So, I mean, he never really had to talk to me, which is probably good for him.
That's great.
But now I've pulled him over. I'm like, yeah, I need Barry here. I'm trading the Barry for a Benz. You get Benz, I get Barry.
Nice. Well played. Well played.
I guess, you know, being one of the owners kind of gives you the perks. Nah, I'm taking that employee. You get this one. That's how we're doing this. Benz is a great guy. Don't get me wrong. Benz is awesome. You know Benz.
Musical Benz. You can move him around where you need him.
Skinny Benz. He's not so skinny. Benz.
Yeah.
You know,
he's been working
with Pete. He's not so skinny anymore.
Pete keeps him fat and sassy. Well, yeah, I mean, that was the biggest thing in my life. Not much going on, brother, to be honest. I mean, I'm going through a reading phase again. I'm starting to read a lot. So that's really good. That's a sign that I'm fully recovered now from the book. My energy's up. I'm reading, going through a real hungry book phase. Like, I just want to read everything in my library, and I haven't been there in a long time. So, last couple of years have just been book, 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 you know, and that's it. So not much going on. How about you?
Well, I mean, other than like what you and I were talking about before, I'm trying to move. That's obviously the biggest thing that's going on. Our business is growing like crazy, like nuts. It's funny. I was thinking about this the other day. I did a training for all of our Bivo pastors. For those who are new to the podcast, Peyton and I used to do something called Bivo Inner Circle. And then we had the Platinum Bivo Inner Circle, where I was trying to teach guys how to do what I did, because I found it to be a very lucrative business when you're on the consulting side of things. And time gave you time, the thing that you need as a church planner, especially if you've got a family, because I'll tell you right now, what always gets cut is the family. Because you feel like, hey, I got this calling from God to do this church, and then I got to work, and what gets cut? Always a family. So I was trying to show these guys how to do this stuff, and some of the guys took it and took like a duck to water and have just been killing it. In fact, I can think about one guy that I don't know that it's because he went through my training, but I would say it was the first one that he did, and it definitely got him on the path where now he is doing all kinds of stuff. In fact, he's even taken training pastors in a different direction and teaching them how to do Facebook ads and stuff like that. I mean, just nice. Really, really solid dude. And some of the guys have just had life-changing experiences going through training. Others didn't do anything with it. Nothing happened to them, right? It's the way it always is.
Yep. Yep.
So anyway, I bring all that stuff up because I went out to those guys maybe 2 years ago, and I was like, hey guys, I'm going to do this special training on how to use AI. And at the time, we were using AI literally just to basically book appointments with people. And it was just amazing. I remember Scott Blair came through it, and Scott's Brazilian, so he speaks Portuguese. And all of a sudden, he switches to Portuguese with the AI chatbot, right? So he's basically texting back and forth. And I can't read it. Like, I don't speak Portuguese. I go, is it good? And he goes, yeah. I go, is it fluent? And he goes, perfect. I mean, like,
wow.
AI is nuts, right? Like, he switched from English to Portuguese and it was perfect. And I look at that and I look at where our business is today, and we're infusing more AI stuff into it. And it's honestly just becoming really fun. Like, I was telling you, I'm working more hours now than I've ever worked. And one of the things that those guys will know from the Bivo Inner Circle, like, my big thing is I don't like to actually work. Like, that's not high on my list of things I want to do. But this is like fun to me. Like, it's not really work. And I suffer from the same thing where, like, I'll start cheating my family out of their time. Yeah. I always got to, like, remember, knock that off.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's funny because when I ask you, like, hey, you seem busy, and you're like, fun busy.
Yeah.
That's cool. So, it's pretty cool. You know, it's funny because we've been talking about the whole AI thing with Through the Word. And obviously, like, I work with tech guys there. Like, they're all into it. And using AI as a tool is great. What they're not cool with for Through the Word is using it for content generation.
Oh, yeah.
For our Bible stuff. They're saying, And we're kind of having to nail our colors to the mast, because there's a on YouVersion, there's this thing called Bible Chat, and they're like the fourth biggest thing on Bible Chat. On YouVersion, and it's all AI generated. It's owned by a guy who's not even a Christian. He just saw a gap, knew he could make money, and he went on there and did this. And the testimonials that they're using are AI generated, so they're fake. Like, it's so unethical, brother.
Yeah.
There's no accountability for false teaching. Like, it could be doing prosperity teaching. It could be doing all this stuff. But also, their ads are like fake Joe Rogan AI generated ads saying how much he's enjoyed the app. Like, it's crazy. And they keep growing that way. So there's all these like AI bots, like a lot of their subscribers. And we're like, dude, like, we're entering into a weird time, because the AI is actually going to start distorting reality. Like, how many times have you seen, like, I saw today where somebody resurfaced, quote unquote, and this is what I'm about to say, a video from the guy who played John Connors in T2, the young kid,
right?
The teenager. And they said, oh, while this went on halfway around the world in Japan, they made this music video of it, and it was totally cheesy. In the comments section, people are like, is that AI or not? People can't tell what's real anymore from what's fake. It looks like it could be real, but nobody knows. So we're now in this place where we have to, more than ever, this has been a thing for a while with the media, we have had to suspend our belief. You know, but it's good. But seeing used to be believing. I saw the video. Now you don't know if what you're seeing is believing. Like, it's weird, man. I like that they call it hallucination from AI when AI makes stuff up. But now we are hallucinating. I am seeing things that are not real. And I've been thinking, you know, in that argument about AI, I've been thinking about, the scariest thing to me about AI is that, obviously you and I talk end time stuff all the time, and I tend to be a partial preterist, and believe that some of it is still reserved for the end here. Obviously there's some stuff's going to happen at the end. If you don't know what a preterist is, it's an AD 70 reference, when the destruction of the temple, a lot of what Jesus said happened during AD 70. He told us that. He said all these things will be fulfilled before this generation passes away, which led pastors of different theological persuasions to say, oh, well, generation means this and that in the Bible sometimes. No, it doesn't. But it always means that age. And if you want to say, well, we're still in the age of, no, you made that up to fit your theology. Jesus said that for a reason. If he were talking about, he says, the people standing here will not taste death before these things are fulfilled. So there's a time stamp on it. So, but anyways, going into AI stuff, where it says, you know, that the beast was made, you know, was given the ability to speak, right? So that it sounded like a man. I'm just looking at AI going, huh. You know, we're made in the image of God. That's part of the theological argument that through the Word is making about AI is, you know, God has always chosen to glorify himself through man who is made in his image. That is what's unique to us as opposed to the animals. It is what is unique to us as opposed to AI content. But here's the thing. AI is not made in the image of God. It's made in the image of man. And the Antichrist and the beast has this real connection to man in the image of man and speaking like man. And it's just made me think, like, what if AI is not a human, or the beast is not a human, but the beast is something it's when man makes an image, something in his own image. And it becomes like a live, that's what you read Revelation. It's like, whatever the beat, the graven image, it becomes alive when it's not alive. And so you're like, oh, That's interesting. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I probably get a lot of
all I know is I've seen enough Terminator movies to know that in the end, what we don't want is AI.
That's right, man. Unless we have time travel. Time travel will help us a little bit. We get time travel, we're good.
We're good.
Yeah, okay. Man. I would just keep sending things back before they do and all that. I'm down for that, you know? All of a sudden, like another Peyton turns up. Hey, Pete, listen to me. We got to go. So if you ever hear a Skynet broadcast, you'll know that Pete and I got a time machine.
I love it. Yeah. So anyway, you know, that's what's going on with me and all the fun, good stuff, right?
Well, great Scott, Pete. You know what time it is?
Oh, great Scott. It's time for this week's topic.
Let's get down to the nitty gritty. Well, our topic today is not about AI. Our topic today is why your church or why most churches don't multiply. So that's our title today. And I want to kind of talk through that because, you know, I can't remember the exact statistic, and I don't believe most of the statistics anyways, but it is actually, according to Exponential, it was less than 10% of churches out there multiply. That's the going figure. Less than 10% multiply. If you do not multiply your church plant within the first 5 years, chances are you're not going to. And the earlier you do it, the first year, the second year, the more likely you are to continue multiplying. So in the case of Refuge Long Beach and Pillar, we did it in the first few years, and then we kept doing it. Once we, ironically, each year after that, we multiplied. But it doesn't, and I wouldn't even say we multiplied well, Pete, but we multiplied. And the reason for that was that our people were mobilized. If you are mobilizing people in your church plant now, you will create a culture of multiplication. People won't want to stop with that church. So, and the thing is you could do everything right in your church plant, everything right, and still not multiply. Think about that. You could do everything. You can follow the books. You can do all this stuff. But if the one thing you're not doing is mobilizing people on mission, your church will not multiply. And so going back to the Gospels, you know, if you take church plantology, you follow everything in there, except I did have a chapter on mobilization about disciple making. Had three T's, time, teaching, tactics. It's like these principles, I've been kicking them around for a while. But Acts versus the Gospels, man, like that's the key. You have to teach people to do what was in the Gospels as well as what was in the book of Acts. So it's not, for most church planners, it's not just you. It's the entire system that's off. We end up focusing our church plans on gathering a crowd rather than discipling the individual. And if you start discipling the individuals, whether or not it's 1 year, your people will be ready. I think 1 year is a little too soon, personally. I think you need a good 2 years to get the church itself really caught up. And again, that goes back to the time teaching tactics. Slow down and take time to pour into those people, to invest. It's not a conveyor belt. You're not just, yeah, you know, I'm gonna pour into you for a year and send you out. That's probably unrealistic. You probably need to spend a little more time there. Paul spent 3 years in Ephesus, spun out 7 churches. That's not a bad rate to go. He was the master. I think he kind of figured in 3 years I can send out 7. And some of those guys planted the same, you know. So like Epaphroditus, he planted 2 churches. So any thoughts on that?
No, just listening to lecture Peyton.
Well, I'm not lecturing. I'm just throwing thoughts out. I'm trying to stimulate you and to provoke you if it were, to comment.
I got nothing yet, but keep going.
All right. Well, so teaching alone. So many of us in ministry, we focus on, you know, the Sunday sermon. Like if you stop and think about how much, you know, you think, oh, this Sunday I'm going to teach on this and that and that. And you might think, oh, it's Monday. I got all this time, you know, for my sermon. We have been conditioned to think like that. What about disciple making in the week? Are you just going to show up and teach them on Sunday? Or is there another way to get people to the same end that doesn't involve just speaking to a crowd on Sunday morning? Could it be, like David Sunday's mentor taught him, the key to ministry is spending more time with fewer people? That's where the good stuff happens. You take people out to coffee. You invite them over for dinner. And I know we're all busy, right? You meet them for breakfast before they go to work, you know, a little diner or whatever. You just meet them for coffee for an hour. That's all it takes. How's your life? How's your walk with God going? How can I help you with that? Point them in the right direction. Point them to Jesus, of course. But point them to the right direction. You might meet and listen to somebody and just hear them. And then the next day or two, as you're praying for them, ask the Lord, is there, like I met with someone last week. And it was a couple days after I had met with them, I was given a prophetic word and a scripture. And I called them up and talked to them about it. Said, hey, I just had something. And you could see it was more effective that I had not responded then. Like, I'm not trying to cram in disciple making. Like, I have a limited time, got to go fast. It's just rhythms. It's rhythms, regular rhythms of investing into people. And, you know, kind of in my second book, Cha-Ching, Reaching the Unreached, I talked about that anyone you disciple will become a leader. And I didn't have the theological framework for that back then, but on this book, Discipology, cha-ching, that's the only cha-ching we get for Discipology because it's a current book. Cha-ching when I talk past books. But Discipology, I actually, I gave the framework of when Paul describes what a leader is, and all he does is describe a mature disciple. That's all he does, mature disciple, faithful to their spouse. Not arrogant. This is what a Christ-like, fully formed disciple looks like. And Paul's saying, Timothy, Titus, put mature disciples into a place of serving and leading. That's it. Just make sure they're mature disciples. So that's the framework. If you pour into someone and disciple them, they will become a mature believer. Hence, they will become someone who can lead others. It's that simple. Elders, deacons, that's all you need to be. Someone who reflects Jesus to others. That's it. Why do we make it more complicated than that? Right? Can you represent Jesus to other people? Do they see Jesus at work in your life? So that's all you need. I don't know what you think about that.
I know you're like looking for more discussion. I don't know that I have much on this.
Well,
I know it's ironic because, you know, some of the things that you're saying, I'm listening to and I'm thinking about what seems to be most important to pastors. I should back that up. That's not the right phrase. It's not what seems to be most important. What actions we see that they take, that's what leads us to believe it's more important. I don't think it is. Like, I think a good example is my church, right? My church. It's in Texas. Texas, like, big church is just a thing here, right? Like, and I would say probably every pastor in Texas wants to have a big church. And the reality is, though, like, our church really pushes the small groups. And it's because all the pastors have been so impacted by being in small groups their entire lives. So it is the big thing that they push. But at the same time, it's also like, you know, invite people to church, invite people, right? And, you know, you want the bigger church. Well, I don't know that that's, you know, they want people to hear Jesus for sure. But you know, I look at church and I look at what we went through at, like, let's say Refuge Long Beach, what you're going through right now at your current church plant. Like, there's an intimacy when it's small groups meeting. Like, you really, you know people on a different level. And that's why they feel so passionate about small groups as well. But it's also harder to get someone to go to a small group, right? If they don't know anyone, like, people don't really want to sign up. And, you know, what about the weird church people? You know, what's this group going to be? That kind of a thing. So, you know, it's fascinating to me. Which, by the way, something you asked me about the other day that this conversation just sparked in my head. When I was visiting my family over our kids' spring break, right? I hadn't been back to California since we left, so I hated going back. But, you know, one of the stories that my dad told me that I'd never heard before in my entire life, right? 50 years old, never heard this story from my dad. He had been praying, you know, constantly for months, Lord, what do you want me to do with my life? What do you want me to do with my life? Right. Looking for that direction that all of us, I think, on one level or another, look for. Just like you and I were talking about before the call, right? Looking for direction. And he felt like God kept telling him, you know, be a pastor, be a pastor. He's like, that can't be, right? That can't be. And then, and the part of the story that I'd never heard before, and I'd never heard really that part either, but I can't remember exactly what the circumstances were, but one day he was really praying about it. And he goes, it's the only time in my life where I heard the audible voice of God say, be a pastor and a good one.
Mm.
And like for him, you know, just like almost how we were talking about before, when it comes to making choices in life, you know, we were talking about Nehemiah. He had his vision, right? Build the wall, build the wall, build the wall. If you wanted to take him away, like the other kings want to do, hey, you know, come down here and meet with us. He's like, no, it's not going to help me build the wall. This is my vision. This is what I'm doing. Like for my dad, that was his vision. That's what he was doing. Like, be a pastor and a good one. But along those lines, right, he went to seminary. He went to Talbot back before it was a part of Biola. And all these pastors would come in and talk. And he's like, oh, that's what I want to be a mega pastor too. I'll be invited back, right? And like, there's so much of that. Like that's, and then, you know, he realized though later, like that's not what God has called him to be a pastor. Yeah. And a good one is not be a pastor and a good one of a big size church. Like,
right.
Maybe God does that. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe you're, you know, a Rick Warren. Maybe you're not. Maybe you're what was his name? Vader's, Carl Vader's.
Yeah, Carl Vader. I was thinking of him as you're talking. I'm like, thank God for Carl Vader's who gave those guys legitimacy.
Yeah.
You know, finally, someone who spoke out and said, hey, you're not all called to be that. You're not failing because you're not a mega. You didn't break this barrier, that barrier, all that nonsense.
But like, that's so much in our mindsets. And you, on one level, just like you and I have talked about for years, there's ego and impact. I want to have impact on people, but there's also the ego. Right. You know, we still have ulterior thinking, maybe not even on the surface level, maybe subconsciously. So I do wonder, you know, how many of our church planners, the focus isn't multiplication, not necessarily
addition. It's addition.
It's addition, but it's not multiplication because, for one, that's just not the way our society is. It's not the way the Christian society is. It's not what they've been exposed to their whole life. It's not about, you know, how do I set up a church plant that's going to be sending out church plants? That's not the mindset.
Well, like, okay. So for example, like I've been to pastors' churches, like Hugh Halter's church is small. Alan Hirsch's church when he was in LA was small. Some of Paul's churches were small and they were meant to be, or there are various factors for that. you don't need to have a large church. Now, it's okay to a certain degree to be like, let's say you're 20 people and you're like, you have to make a choice. Am I a house church with 20 people? Or do I want to, like, for me, I'm a community church. I've pastored mega church. I've grown a mega church. But I am most comfortable with somewhere around 100 to 200 people. That's where I'm the happiest. It's enough. It's not too much. Everybody still knows everybody. There's all of the gifts in play. There are multiple outreaches. you can plant off easily. And, you know, like refuge, like, you know, I think the biggest we ever got was like 120.
Did we get that big? Are you serious?
Yeah. We got that big, particularly towards the last year when I handed it off. That was our biggest year.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, we filled that new building pretty well. And I, you know, I kind of look at, there is a point at which, like for me, 120, I'm good. I don't feel like we got to grow any more than that. And so for me, if I'm like where I'm at right now, I got about 40 people in my church plant. I celebrate every disciple made, every new person that hears the gospel, everyone who becomes a disciple or follower of Jesus. That's exciting to me. And I will continue. But yes, the apostolic part of me will always seek to mobilize internally and to multiply externally. That's what apostolics do. So that's where, and you've heard me say that for years, right? Like mobilization internally. I'm a catalyst. You're a mobilizer. That's the inward face. And I said that way back in plantology. So all this stuff is not new in my thinking. I've just packaged it now on a disciple making, it couched in the disciple making language. And so this is the thing. This is where people are, like for your dad, going back to his story, what I love about that is I do believe that there is a call to ministry to leave your nets, which your dad had, right? Which I had. Not that, and same with Paul, you know, like, hey, serve me, make this your full-time deal. And not that every Christian is not called to be a witness, but there are people who they leave their nets and they go, I'm just doing this full time. That does require a call from the Lord, because that second calling at the boats, when he said, follow me and I'll make you fishers of men, he was calling them to leave their nets. They were leaving the town of Capernaum when he said that. He had told them the day before, hey, I have to go. Like the Lord's sending me out. I've got to preach the kingdom for this reason. I was sent. Jesus was going on his apostolic mission and he invites them with him to train. But here's the thing. What if the average believer in your church needs to know that they could too serve God, even if they don't leave their nets? Where are they going to get that call from? From you. As a leader, you are the equipper, you are their leader. You have to spy out in them, call out in them what you see. Like they always say, the I see in you stuff that Jesus does all throughout John 1. So that's what where mobilization starts. You start taking everyday believers with you into ministry. They're, you know, they're not going to be pastors. What we do is we think, oh, they're never going to be a pastor, so I won't bother spending time with them training them. Wrong. They are going to be a witness where they're at, but they do need training, right? They need discipleship and mentorship. They still need to know the basics of how God works in your life. The conversation you had with me before this call, you know, like your church has been teaching people how to know the will of God. They need all of that, right? Where are they going to get that? They're not just going to get it from Sundays. So by you showing up in their life and spending time with them, and your leaders, by the way, because it can't just be you, which means you may need to disciple your leaders first. Hopefully you're doing that already, that you see yourself as on a team leadership, which if you don't know, I'm a big team leadership guy. We had the Team Leadership Podcast. My not next book, but the book after that would be called Teamology. My first book, which is now called How to Make a Fist, was all about team leadership. These are the things that you know, it's really important, but you should be shepherding and discipling your team like Jesus did, or like Paul did his team. But beyond your team, then the rest of you go and equip. And so you should be letting people, you should be what the Lord was directly to your dad for his call to leave his nets. You should be that for the gifting of every person. You should be calling out their gifts. You should be, you know, leaning into their passions and their burdens and hearing those and giving voice to them. And like one of the guys that I'm discipling right now, he's my neighbor. I was walking past his house the other night, and he goes, "Hey man," he was getting home from work, and I said, "What are you doing?" He's like, just getting home." And I said, and he goes, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm walking up to hear the SpaceX reentry, which was landing off the coast of San Diego." And they said, "Oh, if you go in this 15-minute windows, if there's a sonic boom, you might hear it, you might even see something." So I said, "Oh, I'm walking up top of the street to see the reentry of the rocket." And he goes, "Oh, when's that happening?" I said, "Well, it's happening right now. Like we got like 3 minutes till the window starts." So I said, "I bet we'll see a bunch of people up there." Sure enough, there's a bunch of people up there on the bluff, because I live on the in a neighborhood that's off a lagoon. It's got a little bluff, and you can see, no buildings in your way. And so he goes, "Oh, I'll come with you." And so we walk up there, we wait around, no sonic boom. But that whole time we're sitting there, standing there on this bluff overlooking the ocean, I'm talking to him about, "Hey, I'm thinking about what we talked about last time, you know, about how the Lord was putting on your heart about prisoners getting out of prison." And I told him the story about Refuge Long Beach, a guy with the muscle grills. And I said, "You've got a transport company. What would be the chances that God uses your transport company to start training guys getting out of prison so that they have a job and they have stability, and you start discipling them?" He's only been walking with the Lord this year. Like, he's new. And He's like, "That's kind of what I was thinking." But, you know, he needs somebody to call it out, like to see, like to help him envision how the Lord might want. And I can't force it. I don't tell him this is what the Lord's going to do through you. I'm just teasing out. I'm helping him explore. But the validity of having a pastor or a mentor or a mature believer calling these things out, it cannot be underestimated, because it's like you're giving permission for them to use their gifts. You're starting to put people into that tactical phase. We're spending time, I'm teaching them, and this is the tactical. And because I'm planting, I said, "How can we as a church get behind that vision? How can we help? How can this little church plant we have, how can we help mobilize you into this?" That's what you do. If you can mobilize a guy like that, watch out. And he's a total evangelist. I had to tell him that night, "You know you're an evangelist, right?" And he's like, I am. See, that's funny, because I'm thinking I got to share the gospel all the time. I'm thinking more and more about that. And I'm getting bolder and bolder. He's a total evangelist. But that's what it looks like. So if you're not doing this stuff, if all you're thinking about is your Sunday sermon, that's why your church won't multiply. You've got to mobilize. Hence, # discipology. That's all I got, Pete.
Well, I like it, man. It's food for thought. It's stuff to think about. But, you know, the real question is, how do I take care of all my bookkeeping? I got to focus on all this discipleship and
multiplication. Yeah, if you're mobilizing people, man, you don't have time for that. You know what I do, Pete? I give all my bookkeeping responsibilities to an organization called Simplified Church. And they're at simplifiedchurch.com, which is very convenient.
Wait, simplifiedchurch.com?
Yeah. And Pete, it's in the label. They'll simplify your church for you.
What? I don't even know what to think.
Well, let me tell you what to think. What Reggie? You think is
Reggie? What's that?
Pick up the phone right now and call simplifiedchurch.com.
1-800 Simplify Church. We don't even know their number. That's why we can't have nice things.
Oh, we're nice advertisers. No, they're great. They're great. Check them out, simplifiedchurch.com. They handle all your bookkeeping needs, tax compliance, donor receipts. I mean, so much budgeting. They'll help you with anything you need. So go ahead and give them a call.
Yeah. And should I just do the sign out then?
Yeah, sign us out, baby.
And remember, if you want to reach the ones that nobody's reaching, you need to go where nobody's going and do what nobody's doing.
If you want to see the next ad, press 2 now.